What is up, Level Up Nation? Welcome to episode 129 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the newest member of the Sneaky Cosplay Patreon and the king of the cosplay himself, Joey. What's up, buddy?
Okay, whoa. Now, Sneaky's doing great things over there, but I don't know if I'm ready to support that. I think Cloud9 needs to practice a little bit more in the Rift, personally. Sneaky's killing it in cosplay, but not quite at ADC at the moment.
He's killing it in cosplay and making some sweet, sweet side cash dressing up like anime characters, which just...
He keeps pushing the border more and more. Like, I feel like the line was drawn, and he's just crossed it so many times now.
He keeps pushing that line back. It's like, it's kind of like the entire gaming community is like, I dare you to cross this line. He's like, okay. He crossed it, like, ah, I see what you did there. Cross this line now. And they keep crossing. Like, he's gotten to the point now, you know, we're only doing this because Sneaky is awesome and he's an amazing player, but his cosplay really confuses a lot of people. He's gotten to the point now where he's taking really risque versions of his cosplay photos and hiding certain booty parts with a monkey emoji, which makes it even like your sinner's going like, and he does the whole thing where it's like, you know, oh, if you want to see the uncensored version of this picture, subscribe to my Patreon. And Joey, like, I know you just, like, you know, automatically sub to him for like 5 years on that thing. You're like, I need all the non-monkey emote pictures if I possibly could, please. You know, so I mean, it's, you just got to share the wealth, you know.
It's a little too much for me, to be honest.
But Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That is at the Level Up Podcast. That is at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're at it on Twitter, go ahead and give Joey and myself a follow. That's Joey at Courtside King and myself, Fiasco. If you're watching here live on Twitch, welcome to the show. Those handles are right below those horrible mugshots you're currently staring at. Well, mine's horrible. Joey's just sneaky level cosplay amazing. And if you're listening later on the podcast, they will be in the show notes for you below. Nation, another week of esports happened, and I believe Overwatch League was on cable, not cable, but network television again, which means we have another case of baby boomers gone crazy when it comes to esports on television. Joey, that is just one topic of many topics this episode. What else are we touching on episode 129?
John, a whole lot of Overwatch in this one in particular. We have roster moves from League of Legends to CSGO to Overwatch, but on top of that, Overwatch making some big moves as far as partnerships, and they have a new map hitting the public realm now, moving from the PTR on over. Some Microsoft news and a few other things like MSI going on as well.
Microsoft news. Why am I not surprised that Microsoft found a way back in our show notes? Joey, if we're talking about Microsoft again, I know I'm going to need a little assistance. I'm going to need some assistance to help me get through that segment. And Joey, we all need assistance to get through this amazing podcast. So Joey, it's time for that time-honored tradition passed down from generation to generation. Joey, I am talking, of course, about the drink of choice. So Joey, for the 129th time, and this totally does not make us alcoholics at all, what is your beverage, please?
Before I get into that, I do have to talk about the chat talking about my toilet paper again.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, chat, for calling him out on the toilet paper. That's been there for like 3 weeks now, Joey. I think like what, a total of two rolls have disappeared in three
weeks?
Yeah,
it's been there for a while. So we do Costco. We do everything in bulk. Paper towels, toilet paper, really anything that you can do in bulk from Costco. And I keep forgetting to move that thing until John and I get on the video and John's like, oh, the toilet paper's back again right before we go live. So, yeah, welcome back, toilet paper.
That is welcome Charmin. Charmin, if you'd like to sponsor the show, you can find us on the social medias at the Level Up Podcast. I'm pretty sure Joey would love a Charmin sponsorship for the show.
Man, I'm open to any sponsorship. So if you guys are interested, let us know. We'll be a little particular here and there, but overall, we're open to listening to any offers.
So Charmin absorbs quite well from what I've heard from their commercials. So I feel like they could absorb a spilled beverage of the drink of choice, sir. So let's go back to the drink of choice real quick. Joey, I need your beverage for the 129th time.
Wow, John, that was from the Joey School of Transitions. I'm very impressed.
I learned from the master.
I'm going with I believe it's a Royal Bee Orange Blossom Honey Ale from Center of the Universe Brewing Company in Ashland, Virginia. I just found it this weekend. Check out this can label.
That is actually really cool. I really like that a lot. Okay. I'm going to need you to break this down. You said it's a honey ale?
An orange blossom honey ale.
What is an orange blossom?
That's a great question. It has like a citrusy flavor. I think an orange blossom is a flower, if I remember correctly. But orange, I want to say it's actually the blossom on an orange tree. But think of it like an orange zesty flavor mixed with honey, and then you have a little bit of a beer ale taste to it as well. So kind of, it's almost a little bit more meaty than beer.
Okay, so would you say it's probably on the same line as like, now I know it is a different kind of beer. I know it's a Belgian, but would you say it's probably kind of on the same lines as like a Blue Moon?
No.
No, okay, not at all. Okay, cool. I was way off with that one. And that's completely fine, Joey, because I, once again, am tapping into that hard liquor because it's a Monday, and Mondays are terrible, especially when you work where I work. No, none of them watch my show, so I don't care. None of them watch our show, so I really don't care if I talk trash about them or not. But, Joey, we have our beverages. We have our topics. We have a lively chat here on Twitch. Joey, it's time to get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go!
John and chat, we are kicking it off with roster moves. In League of Legends, Darshan has left CLG, and Rune is reportedly joining the new roster. John, Darshan has been there for 4.5 years at CLG. He's really been a staple on that team up in the top lane. A lot of people say he takes on a shot caller role as well in the squad. So this, to me, is almost a move to a new era for CLG. They had a bit of that move when Double Left moved on to TSM. Now I think it's another jump forward with Darshan leaving, or possibly a jump backward. But either way, they're moving to a new iteration of CLG, especially in that top lane, that top half of the map. The big thing for me here, Rune is very talented. Younger player coming over, I believe. I know he played for Giants over in the EULCS, or formerly EULCS. Really good top. He's not incredibly good mechanically, but at the same time, he was able to get it done. He was one of the better tops over in EU when he was playing. So I'm excited to see him on the CLG roster.
Yeah, first, Darshan, I mean, I can't think of anything more NA or more of an NA staple than Darshan. Like you said, Joey, 4.5 years with CLG. I mean, this man has almost done it all that you can in North American League of Legends. An absolute beast in top lane. I've watched so many incredible 1v1, 1v2 outplays he's performed, and so many backdoor Nexus blitzes that he's done. It's been absolutely fantastic watching him play on CLG. I think teams would be absolutely crazy not to go after an experienced player like Darshan. Just what he can do for an organization that's either up and coming or an organization that's kind of rebuilding. He's still a great player that you can really build a roster around. He hasn't really fallen off too much. Like I said, he has been in the scene for a while, but so is Double Lift, so is Sneaky, so is Jensen. A lot of these players have been playing 3, 4, 5 years, and they're still relevant. They're still kicking some serious butt on the Rift. So I expect Darshan to be picked up real soon, but what a major moment. I think you hit the nail right on the head, Joey. It's an end of an era for CLG having Darshan leave. It's just, it still hasn't sunk in yet. Like, the idea of Darshan leaving CLG is just, it's almost mind-numbing.
I mean, 4.5 years of doing anything feels very long. 4.5 years in esports is like an eternity to be on a team. Like, just the fact you have so much turnover, and as players age, they lose their mechanics so quickly, unless you're Soaz for some reason, or really Faker as well. But there's so few players that can keep it up for that long, and he's been on the same team, performing at, I would say, a decent level. CLG has dipped below, I would say, bottom six at times throughout those couple seasons. But overall, to go 9 splits altogether is crazy for me on one team, and usually you don't see that outside of a franchise player. So I would say, even if we see retired jerseys come around in esports at some point, Darshan might be one of those players as really a pillar of the early CLG lineups. Other than that, one more thing to hit on this, John. So before he was Darshan, he was Zion Spartan. Which name do you like better?
I like Darshan. Zion Spartan it's a little bit of a mouthful. Like, I'm thinking like shoutcasting here. Like, if you're trying to say it's like, oh, Zion Spartan backdoor in the Nexus. It's just, no, Darshan backdoor in the Nexus. It just flows. It flows. It sounds so much better. Darshan, it's enough without being too much. Zion Spartan just feels like it's one of those stereotypical esport gamer tags. like Cool Guy 420 or something absolutely stupid like that, or XX Skulls Are Life, you know, 2020.
Wow, that was a
XX,
very different direction there.
Some, you know, I'm trying to keep a PG for the children here, Joey. But yeah, it, you know, Zion Spartan, I'm not a fan. Chat says, or Courtside King.
Yeah, very funny, chat. Very funny.
That. So chat giving Joey a hard time already here at Twitch. That's a rough crowd today for you, Joey.
Clue started this on Twitch, or Twitter, I mean. So you knew it's coming. We'll have fun with him, though. Don't worry. Moving on to the LEC, we have Excel Esports adding Hjarnen to their roster. Hjarnen, formerly known as the G280 carry that went to the semifinals at Worlds this past year. Honestly, John, I'm surprised it took this long for a team to sign him. Now he's going to be reunited with Kasing, who is the shot caller over at Excel, and they played together in the bot lane for, I want to say, about three seasons together on H2K. So I'm really excited to see them paired back up. It has been a while because Hjarnen was with Wadid for, I believe, 2 years within that difference. So it's going to be interesting to see how they come back together. Kasing, obviously being in that captain role, is going to have quite a bit of authority. But two friends coming back together, two players who've played together, and it also brings another veteran player to the lineup. And I think really veteran play is what that team needs in particular. A young, new roster, really a new organization into League of Legends. Having more veteran players that have been around, that have been to the top echelon of play, is going to be really, really good for that squad.
And just think of this. Like, you touched on their time together with H2K. From a team chemistry standpoint, you give them a week, and I guarantee you they're clicking. Don't act like these guys haven't played together, you know, for however long they've been apart. They still play randoms. They still play, you know, solo duo together. You know, this is awesome. If you're an Excel Esport fan, if you follow the LEC, I almost said EULC, if you follow the LEC, this is actually a really good thing. I really like seeing these two amazing players come back together. Kasing, you know, as a support player myself, I love watching his gameplay. And I just think the reunion of these two players is going to be absolutely outstanding for Excel Esports. And I feel like this could really help turn around their current season.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's a huge move making it now in May before we enter into the summer split as well. This will give him some time to reorient with Kasing, some time to really get to know the players, and some time for that team really to strategize who's going to be our carry. Is Hjarnen a little out of practice? Can he come right in and carry it from the start? Is the meta going to favor him? Obviously, that Heimerdinger of his can kind of come out whenever. His Jinx used to be really good as well, but she's also not huge in the meta right now. So I'm curious to see how all that comes into play, but I think this is the right time to make a roster transition like this. If you wait till June, you're getting a little too close to summer split. This way you have a couple weeks before you even get into that vicinity. Last but not least, for League of Legends, we have Rainover joining C9 as a coach. John, this is another move I really like. Cloud9 making yet another good move. It seems like they always do around this time of the year. Rainover comes in a wealth of experience, veteran knowledge as well, like we were hitting on. It's going to help younger players. Obviously, Licorice has gained a lot of experience, but I think having an experienced jungler coming and help out a young top laner is going to be effective as well. Not only that, but Rainover is known for his strategy. He's known for his shot calling, and I think that's going to be a very big wealth of knowledge coming into C9. C9's made some questionable calls throughout the year. One of those is letting Sneaky cosplay as much as he has.
Oh my God.
But on the Rift, they've also made questionable calls as well. And I think bringing in a veteran like Rainover, he's going to be able to train and hone in on what type of shot calling they should be making in certain situations, particularly around objectives for me. C9 has not been as clean in that area. I think he's going to be able to help clean that up and make C9 look very good coming into next split.
You know what else is very clean? Sneaky's cosplay. And talk about a great marketing strategy. If you're Cloud9, if you're C9 Jack, you're over here. You want more players to cosplay. Why? Because you're tapping into a market that has really been kind of neglected. You know, the cosplay esport fan is being neglected. It's all esport. Here's Sneaky giving back to the cosplay esport fan, bringing them into Cloud9. It's a win-win if you're Cloud9. But another win-win is Rainover, like you said, Joey, joining Cloud9 as an assistant coach here. And I think it's an amazing move. Like, you hit the nail right on the head. The experience, his play style, his strategy. He was part of that historic 18-0 at the time, 18-0 Fnatic team, undefeated in the EULCS. Joey, that was like, what, 5 years ago now?
2015.
So 4 years ago, that historic team to go undefeated in the EULCS at the time, he has that experience. And I believe, after the research I did, I couldn't find of any other times where he did this. This is his first coaching gig. there's a lot of great opportunity here. You have an amazing veteran in Sven Skarren playing jungle, and then you also have Blaber backing him up in the jungle as well, a young jungler that can learn an aggressive play style and possibly fine-tune his game a little bit more with Reignover in order to possibly one day finally take over that spot from Sven Skarren and be the jungler that Cloud9 needs for that next generation, if you will, of Cloud9 team. Licorice has already established himself, which is awesome. He needs that solid jungler. He needs to be able to count on his jungle. Right now, Sven Skarren and Blaber switching out the two, it's not going to work. Blaber didn't play as well going into the spring split, so Sven won that spot over. I think even Sven can learn from Reignover here. There's so much potential here. When I saw this earlier today, I could have not been more happy as a Cloud9 fan seeing Reignover join Cloud9. To me, this is a huge win for Cloud9.
Yeah, definitely. And when you look at Sven's jungle style as well, he's been known throughout his career for more of that carry style. He likes playing the Lee Sin. He likes playing a very carry-style Lee Sin as opposed to more of a supportive jungle style, which he's kind of been forced into in certain matchups. I think bringing Reignover in, who's really played that supportive style his whole career, will help a veteran like Sven grow in that area as well. On top of that, John, I want to say he actually coached C9 before. I want to say it was Worlds like 2, maybe 3 years ago. Reignover came in as an assistant coach. So he does have some experience coaching as well as coaching in the organization. And then on Fnatic's undefeated run, I would also say that he coached Huni in a sense. Huni overextended quite a bit, and Reignover coached him into when to go forward, when to make some aggressive plays, when to wait on the jungle as well. Because Huni liked to play those crazy plays. He was very much like Caps in that area. And I feel like Reignover helped rein him in and really smoothen up his style more than anything. He kept the flashy style, but he didn't overcommit as much. Moving forward to CSGO, we have Neo rumored to join FaZe Clan CSGO roster. John, another big veteran move here. Neo's been around the scene for a long time, also known as a shot caller. I think the biggest thing for me here is that bringing Neo in, if the rumor does come to fruition, this would allow those younger players who are stepping into those shot caller roles right now to really step back and focus on their mechanics. CSGO being such a highly mechanical driven game, especially with all the flick shots there are in game, if they're able to step back and focus on those mechanics as opposed to having to look around the map, as opposed to really having to focus on telling people where to be at certain times and just focusing on making those shots, a lot of those young mechanical players will really be able to step up their game in that way. So I really like this move from FaZe, at least the fact that they're looking into it. If this rumor proves to be true, that at least means they're looking at how can we open up these mechanical players while keeping our team young, but also bringing in some veteran experience. I think this would be the perfect move. If you're going to bring in a veteran, bring in a shot caller, allow those young guys to really let their mechanics shine.
If Neo does join FaZe Clan, and you touched on it, the idea of, first off, FaZe being a massive esport organization, especially in CSGO, huge social media following, huge following in general, especially in esports. I love this rumor if it does become true, because if there's one thing FaZe Clan needs to do, it is you can see the players kind of stressing out a little too much, trying to do things maybe they're not comfortable with. Maybe they want to refine some of their skills prior to trying new plays, new tactics, new whatever they need to do in CSGO. But when you bring in a strong veteran that has that leadership, that has that ability to be that foundation while the other players can kind of tweak their game a little bit, that is massive for an organization, especially like FaZe Clan, especially in CSGO, Joey. Like you said, the flick shots, everything else that goes into it, all that takes practice. You have to be put in those situations. You have to play the game. You have to be able to fine-tune that. And it's really hard to do that when you're worrying about what everyone else in your team is doing, their positioning, what's going on. So bringing in a leader like Neo would be absolutely massive for FaZe. So for myself, a neutral party, I hope Neo does join. That would be a massive pickup for FaZe.
Yeah, and it's just showing that FaZe, why they're one of the best CSGO teams out there. They're willing to look in different areas. They're not always going for that crazy star player that's up and coming, but they're trying to find ways to unlock the talent they already have by possibly looking into that free agency pool of veterans. How can we bring a veteran player on? They did it with Olaf Meister. He did very well as well. Now they're looking in that shot caller role. How can we bring a veteran on who might not be as good mechanically anymore, but can produce in a different way? So I really, really like the fact FaZe Clan's going that direction. The Dallas Fuel over in the Overwatch League on the opposite side of the string here, they've promoted Trill to their main roster from the Envy Overwatch Contenders team. John, this is the exact opposite. While we see FaZe looking at veterans, we see this team looking at the young talent in their academy system, which I love just as equally. The fact that they are producing this talent, they're really maturing this talent and growing it up, and then showing there is a pathway to the main team, that is huge for me. We've seen so many academy teams in, I would say, League of Legends, Overwatch previously, CSGO, where academy players just go to die, more or less. They'll be there for years and they'll never get promoted to any team, or that organization will lock them in so no other organization can sign them because they want them to be available 3 years down the road. This, to me, is showing, hey, the Overwatch League has made this academy system. They're somewhat dedicated to trying to make it work, and we've seen it work for some teams, whether it be through veterans or whether it be through young players. This one in particular, being a young player, Trill has proven it at the academy level, now coming up to the Fuel level in the Overwatch League.
And this is also what I really like seeing. The whole academy, it's a pro system, Joey, just like you said. It's very old school. When you think of a minor league system like this, you might think of some traditional sports. Mainly baseball is the biggest one I can think of. You have that proving ground. You have that ability to take that raw talent and really mold it to fit your organizational's play style. And that's what we're seeing with the Dallas Fuel. Dallas Fuel really underachieved in season one. Season two, they're turning things around. In stage one, they did finish in ninth place in the standings. They didn't make the playoffs in stage one. But in stage two, they started to refine their skills, start to play together a little bit more as a team. They made some really, really good changes in game. They finished in sixth. Sixth place was good enough to make it to the playoffs for stage two. They didn't win the whole thing. Slight spoiler alert. They didn't win the whole thing. But they're making progress. They're improving. That's what you want to see if you're a fan. That's what you want to see if you own this team. Now, when you realize, hey, look, we have this player in our academy system that is ready for that next step. They're up for the challenge. Mechanically, they have it. Mentally, they have it. They understand the game. They have our play style down. Hopefully, we can plug and play and use some of their unique skills in our overall system to make Dallas Fuel even better. I love this move. Dallas Fuel is trending in the right direction, and I'm really excited to see how he fits in stage three.
Speaking of trending in the right direction, the Washington Justice here locally for us have added friend of the show Grant Perangipe to their front office, serving as the vice president of esports business. Grant previously served as the director of esports business and team operations of Monumental Sports and Entertainment. John, I love this move. You and I know Grant quite a bit on a personal level. He's just a great guy, and he has great vision for everything he does, really. In particular, esports is the area we've seen him work in the most, and he just has such a great vision for that area. He knows what needs to happen for esports in America and esports in general, and I think giving him a new platform of the Washington Justice is going to be a great place for him to really showcase that as well. It's going to be a new league, just like we saw him work very well in the NBA 2K League, now coming on to the Overwatch League in its second season, joining right at the end of stage two. I think Grant's going to do one heck of a job over there.
I expect nothing less from Grant than the absolute best. Just take a look at his track record. With Splice, he brokered one of the largest deals of its kind prior to everyone going for traditional sports organizations with Splice and the Boston Bruins. He then went to Monumental Sports and Entertainment, where he essentially built from the ground up Wizards District Gaming of the NBA 2K League. Also, from the ground up, the Washington Capitals' first adventure into esports with the Capitals Esports Face-Off and the Chell Classic, which was a joint operation between the Washington Capitals and the Tampa Bay Lightning. He did so much for MSE, the NBA 2K League, and just esports in this area, in the DC area already, that making this move with that kind of track record to the Washington Justice fans, if you're watching, if you're listening, get hyped. The track record coming with Grant to the Washington Justice, I know if I'm Mark Ein, I'm excited. This guy is a proven winner. He knows how to get stuff done, and he knows how to do it on a timeline with incredible, incredible results. So I couldn't be more happy from Grant, not just from an esport level, but on a personal level. I think it's absolutely fantastic. I'm so incredibly happy for him, and I can't wait to see what he does with the Justice. I mean, this is only going to help the Justice get even better. Not just as an organization, but as a team, as everything. I just think the entire atmosphere with the Justice is about to change for the better.
Right, and on top of that, John, he also brings something else that we didn't mention. He was a former esports pro player as well,
exactly,
in World of Warcraft. So he knows from the player perspective, he knows from the management perspective, he has a lot of experience in that coaching area as well, working with coaches. So he just brings a wealth of knowledge, and on top of that, working at Monumental, you have the Wizards, you have the Capitals, you have so many traditional sports organizations built out of that as well, and teams that have really gone on to be successful. The Capitals just won the Stanley Cup a year ago. So the fact that they have had so much success in that area, and Grant has worked on both sides, esports and sports, he's going to be able to bring all that together in the Overwatch League that is trying to compete with professional sports league as well. He can bring both those perspectives, which makes him such a valuable asset in this area, and I really think he's going to do great things. I'm excited to see how the Justice improve on their record. They've had a little bit of a rocky start with only one win in the first stage and one win in the second stage. I expect that to continue to grow as we go on. They've been bringing in new players. The two recent support players they brought in have done a great job. Ark and Sleepy, both have looked very impressive already since their additions. I believe they both came in stage two, if I remember correctly, maybe at the very end of stage one. For Ark, I think they're both stage two, though. Is that correct? Do you remember?
I know Sleepy was definitely
Sleepy was the end of stage two, yeah. I think Ark was the beginning of stage two. He might have been toward the end of stage one, though. But either way, two very talented support players coming in. The Justice are really showing they're ready to adapt to this GOATS meta that, for some reason, hasn't left yet. But we're still here with it, and now they're starting to adapt. They're starting to build the team around the meta, and they're also starting to make this team where if it does leave GOATS as the meta, these players can transition into more traditional metas as well. So I'm excited to see how the team grows. I think Grant is going to do one heck of a job over there. Sticking with Overwatch League, because that is such a hot topic this week, Overwatch has entered into a multi-year deal with Upper Deck. The deal involves licensed collectibles for the league, with Upper Deck creating trading cards, stickers, sticker books, prints, posters, and memorabilia. Upper Deck is in its 30th year, so it's been around for quite a while, and the first set of trading cards is set to be released on June 19th. And it will include players and teams from the inaugural season. So if you were a huge fan of Rascal on the London Spitfire, for example, you can still pull one of those cards. Any players that were on teams in the original season, it sounds like, will be in decks, so you can really build all the way back to that first season if you want to. John, how do you feel about this? I haven't really collected trading cards in years. I haven't really kept up with them at all, though I do like a bobblehead here and there, I'm not going to lie. So I'm curious kind of how this builds out. I don't know if I'm going to buy into it a ton, but do you see kids at least buying into it nowadays?
So we're at a really weird place when it comes to collecting cards. Joey, you and I both collected cards back in the day, if you will. and it was fun. You know, I can't tell you how many complete sets I have for baseball seasons, for hockey seasons, for football seasons. It's awesome. It was a fun hobby. That also stopped around... I don't know, probably my freshman year of high school. I didn't have time. I had other things I was interested in that I wanted to do. And collecting cards just kind of fell by the wayside. And, you know, we can turn the clock back even more. When I played Magic, I played with physical cards. Like, you bought card packs for Magic the Gathering. Same thing with the Pokemon trading card game. You still buy physical cards. Now, with the way the world is trending, especially in esports and video games, everything is digital. So this is really kind of a throwback, if you will, to, you know, like 10, 15 years ago, where this was like a major thing in society, where there were a ton of people collecting cards. I can't even tell you if the trading card stores that are near me in Northern Virginia are even still open. Like, I know there were a total of three, but I haven't even bothered looking for them. Like, I can't imagine how you make money off of that. But now you're going to go to esports and these kids that are paying, you know, $10, $20 for their Fortnite skins on a weekly basis from their parents are now going to collect trading cards? I don't know. I feel like maybe some of the older esports fans might get into this versus the younger esport fans. I really don't see collecting cards as a, you know, like a Generation Z kind of thing. Maybe some of the middle to older millennials, it might get them excited a little bit. But other than that, the trading card aspect to me, I'm kind of iffy on it. But I agree with you. Give me a bobblehead. Give me a Rascal bobblehead. Give me a Prophet bobblehead. Give me a Fleta bobblehead. That's awesome. Posters don't do anything. Sticker books, sticker books are literally for small children. That's 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 year olds. And I really don't think there's too many 8 year olds and 7 year olds and 6 year olds playing Overwatch. I could be wrong. I don't know. It's weird. The trading card aspect to me, it feels. I applaud Upper Deck for thinking outside of the box, no pun intended. But to me, it's just, I don't see long term how this is going to be successful.
No, it's not, in my humble opinion. If I'm on Shark Tank and someone brings this to me, I send them right out of the room. I really don't see this doing anything. I think your closest thing is like a bobblehead, to be completely honest. I mean, when you come to trading cards, who's going to want them? Like, I like the idea. I like where they're trying to be creative here. If anything, I think you hit on a big, I was going to say a nail on the head, but we've said that so many times this episode. I feel like you've hit on a big point here as far as if people are going to do this, it's going to be those older generation people. It's going to be those 35, 40-year-olds maybe playing Overwatch because they're the ones who really collected cards as a kid for a long time. I mean, even you and I, we didn't collect for that many years. Like you said, you stopped in high school. It kind of died out when we were much younger. So overall, I don't see it taking off unless you're trying to hit that older audience. But even then, are they really going to want to buy this card with some kid they have no idea who's really playing that character on it? I feel like you're better off selling character-based stuff. So for me, this does not take off. I think prints, posters, maybe your bobbleheads would be the three, if anything, will go off this deal, in my opinion. But overall, I don't see it doing that well. If they want to be a little bit more innovative with it, and I still don't think it would really take it over the edge, they could make it a buy one, get one type of deal where you buy a card pack that's printed, but you also get a digital card as well. And if they could somehow tie that into Overwatch League, maybe getting loot boxes, like certain cards can be turned in for loot boxes or something like that. Again, it takes away from the collecting aspect, but you still bring in revenue that way. So I don't know. I mean, there's a few different things. They could also put codes on them for loot boxes. This is just me kind of going off and getting overly creative. But either way, it's still saying, hey, this product is probably not going to do that well because you have to incentivize it with something else. So overall, I will not be buying in. I hope they do well. If someone wants to gift me a card pack, I will open it on stream. But other than that, I don't think I'll be buying any myself.
Now, Joey, if I remember correctly, some of the cool cards that we could collect, those rare cards, those cards with a piece of the game worn jersey or the game used equipment in it. What if?
Okay, now I like this.
What if they sold a card with a part of Rascal's game used jersey from the season one championship in it? What if his season one keyboard was taken apart and you get the keyboard piece, you get his W key in the card?
See, I like this a lot better.
I
now,
do
at the same point, does Upper Deck need to be involved for that?
No, but if there is a company who has perfected the idea of game used merchandise, if you will, in the form of a collector card, it's Upper Deck. It's Upper Deck and some of these other card companies out there. They have that thing mastered. They take one jersey, they cut it up and say, hey, look, we're going to put what number is Profits 1, right?
Sure.
Number 1. I can't remember.
I don't remember off the top of my head. Yeah.
We'll say, I'm blanking on all the team numbers here. Okay. Corey from Washington Justice. He's number 11. I know that because 11 is my favorite number. There you go. Fun fact of the day. He gets 11 pieces of his jersey cut off, and it's serial numbered 1 to 11. And we all know when you get the serial number that matches the jersey number, that value skyrockets. So you get serial number 11 out of 11 of a game-used Corey jersey from the Washington Justice. That to me, that still gets me excited. It's a jersey he wore on stage, hopefully winning one of the two games that the Justice have so far. Hopefully a lot more to come in stage three. But that would be really kind of cool. And chat's kind of making fun of me for saying putting an entire key on a card. Now, look, you can make fun of me all you want from that. There is actually and I only saw this because it popped up on YouTube for some reason. They are actually making a card that is roughly an inch thick right now because it has a full spike from a baseball player's cleat in it. So don't sit here and laugh when I say the W key off of the keyboard is going to fit when they're already putting spikes from cleats in baseball cards. I feel like the W key is a little bit more reasonable than a chunk of sharp metal being handed out to people at a premium cost. So I think it's doable. I think that is what could really get people excited.
I mean, the only one that's doing successful from what I'm seeing based on pricing is baseball.
Yeah.
Like NFL is doing terrible. All of these other sports are doing terrible. It's really just baseball cards that are selling. And to me, I feel like baseball is selling because it's been so, like, it's really been built into the history of that game. I mean, you could argue Overwatch League is young enough that you can build this into the history, but at the same point, your audience is at such a different level at this point. A lot of these baseball cards are going to middle-aged people. I just don't see someone from OTN's Discord hopping on and buying trading cards. I just don't see it. Even if you melt down a W key or whatever into a card, I think that's creative as heck. And I probably would buy a W key melted card from a championship game. But with that being said, I am not the audience of this game for the most part. Like, you and I watch it, but I would say we're the minority in this. It's mostly going to be those teenage kids for the most part. I would say 15 to 25 range is going to be your big median. So the fact that that is, I really don't see these kids at that age buying in, or even young adults, you could say, buying into these trading cards at this point. If I want to go spend $5, why am I not going to do that on a loot box as opposed to a trading card?
And my last point real quick, why is baseball doing so incredibly well? When you take a look at the age gap, the actual age of people that watch baseball on a semi-regular to regular to religious standpoint, they're all like 50 and plus. They're the people that have that disposable income that they can drop, you know, $3 on a pack here, $4 on a pack here, or $300 on a box for some crazy reason. I'll never understand why I did that as a kid. You know, buy boxes and boxes and boxes because they have that disposable income. There is no 10-year-old to, I would argue, 30-year-old that has that kind of money to just kind of try to go after random luck in collecting esport trading cards. I feel like that's one of the biggest downfalls. And I don't even think Overwatch League would be able to build that into their community that 20, 30, 40 years from now, the next gamer generation coming up is going to say, oh, hey, look, I want to collect Overwatch League cards too because my dad collected them when he was a kid. I don't see that happening anytime soon, if at all.
Done, done, done. Okay, let's move on from that. John, can you give me your best Havana Onana in your Camila Cabello voice?
Joe, first off, I am incredibly impressed you know that song. So I will try to do Havana Ooh La La. There you go. Simple as that. As he spits all over his keyboard.
Wow. And that is why John is a podcaster and not a singer, ladies and gentlemen.
The I new can't Overwatch sing at all, map. Trust me. And yes, Chet, that was cringe. It was super cringe. How do you think I have to feel? I have to live the rest of my life knowing I just did that. It's fine.
Someone needs to clip that one.
Please don't.
Overwatch, new Overwatch map Havana has hit live servers after spending a couple weeks on the PTR. That's the public test realm for all of you filthy casuals. Havana is an Havana is an escort style map that was featured in Overwatch's latest event, Storm Rising, for those of you who had a chance to play that. John, I really like this. I love the way Overwatch is taking these maps. They're continuing with the worldwide theme. We were afraid they might go away from that when the game released, but they've really stuck to it and they've really pushed it even more. Not only inventing places now, but they are going with real life places. Paris was the most recently released one before Havana. Now you have Havana down in Cuba, and they look very, I'm going to say, realistic in a sense. Like, obviously, it is a cartoony universe. It is different as well because they're going to play on it and fictionalize it a bit here and there. But I've been to Paris, and Paris looked just like I imagined Paris looking like before I went and when I was there. And Havana on the same side. I've never been to Cuba. Don't know if I'll go to Cuba anytime soon. But it's what I would imagine Cuba looking like here and there in certain areas. So I really like the idea of this map and the fact that they are continuing to build upon this worldwide look. What are your thoughts on Havana and that recent event as well?
Well, you could have gone to Cuba up until about 2 years ago when the laws were changed. I actually really want to go to Cuba. I've heard amazing things from friends who have been to Cuba. Unfortunately, none of them are gamers, so I can't really take their experience and put it up against Havana. But, I mean, it's just, Blizzard does this. They do amazing jobs at creating these levels to take what they look like and add that futuristic twist to it, because all this does take place in the future. So, you know, I mean, Joey, when you were in Paris, I'm pretty sure you didn't see any hover cars or any kind of robots being your waiter in restaurants. But you have that in the Overwatch Paris map, which is completely fine. I grew up in Korea. The Busan map, while it does look like Busan, Busan does not have robots serving you food at traditional restaurants yet. I feel like that's the one thing that will probably come sooner rather than later. But the map is amazing. It's absolutely gorgeous. They do a phenomenal job. And when we were first introduced to it during the event, I was blown away. It was absolutely beautiful. It was so well laid out. And it has so many different elements just visually in it that, you know, you may have overlooked in other maps, but this one really brings them out. The weather changing when you get closer to the castle, or just everything. The map itself is absolutely beautiful. I loved playing on it. I'm so excited that they took it and they're keeping it from that PvE event and bringing it as an escort map into the regular game. Joy is probably one of my top five maps in the game. It's really that good.
Yeah, and I think one of the best parts of it as well is the coloring. It very much highlights that Cuban coloring that us that have not really been to Cuba but have seen pictures really remember, those bright reds and those pastel greens. And I feel like it's really hinted at that in the map coloring in general. So I love the fact that they took those details and blended them right into the Overwatch game. I don't know where I was going to say after that. I kind of lost my into the Overwatch calling Winston. Microsoft, former Uncharted and Last of Us game designer Robert Ryan has joined Xbox Game Studios The Initiative. Added to the list, John. Ryan is now the senior systems designer at Microsoft's extremely talented studio, previously working on Uncharted 4, The Last of Us Part 2, or some of his big titles. John, this is huge. It's been a couple weeks. I feel like we really haven't talked about this in maybe 3 weeks.
Thank God.
But they are back to adding big developers, big designers. I'm stoked. I mean, Robert Ryan is one of the best out there, working for Naughty Dog, working on some of the best games of the console life, really, for this generation. PlayStation has killed it. No one can deny that. They've had some of the best, if not by far the best exclusives outside of Nintendo Switch, who is an arguable competitor. But Xbox really stood no chance this generation as far as exclusives. Sony did it so well. And now Xbox buying into those studios that did it so well, like Naughty Dog, and pulling over environmental designers, game designers, game lead designers as well, pulling them all over to the initiative, which I would argue, if they can present a good game, because everyone's putting such a high hype on them, they're almost taking AAA to quadruple A here. They've really got to deliver with the amount of talent they have there.
I mean, I would argue quadruple A is still an understatement.
Right.
Look, if you can't beat them, acquire them. That's Microsoft's entire strategy here. And great, they have the money to do that. That's outstanding. That just means there's more expectations, there's more hype, there's more eyes watching you now. Now look, again, full disclosure, PlayStation fanboy. Have been with PlayStation for as long as I can remember. This is a great move by Microsoft. I'm really curious to see how this is going to pay off. I believe we're on our 16th page of developers acquired by Microsoft. So again, gosh, if they do not put out something, if they put out something that's like a No Man's Sky, if they put out something that is halfway complete and they're going to complete it with supplemental updates throughout the next 4 to 5 years, if they put out something that is even remotely considered 99% complete and not 100% complete, I feel like there's going to be a large letdown. There is no reason for Microsoft and their game studio, with all of these incredible designers, directors, producers, you name it, in the video game industry joining them, there is no reason for Microsoft to ever give us a 50%, 60%, 70%, 80%, 90%, 99.9% completed game without it being a full 100% completed. So, I mean, again, look, hey, kudos again to Microsoft. Awesome. Great job. It's fine. Not a problem. Just remember, giants fall pretty freaking hard. So it better be good.
Yeah, I have very high expectations, and I think so does the gaming world at this point. I mean, everyone who's doubting it is doing it because of what we've seen in the past with previous developers, whether it be Microsoft, whether it be PlayStation. Really, Nintendo even has fallen far from certain aspects in certain areas of the gaming industry. So how are they going to do this? They put in so much money. They've acquired so much talent. Are they going to be able to deliver it? I think that's the big question mark. Bringing in this many people, though, John, I almost feel like it needs to be a game that's going to deliver on not only single player, but I think you need to have a strong multiplayer with it as well. I think it's good enough to have a great single player game, but at the same point, just because you have so much talent here and you're basing so much on this studio, bringing in huge single player developers, but also huge multiplayer developers, I feel like you almost need to have a game that has both. I think if you're going to go one direction over the other, I think single player is the way to go, just because you already have other studios like 343 working on Halo. You have the Coalition working on Gears of War. Both those have pretty popular multiplayer scenes, especially with them expanding to PC. I expect those scenes to even grow even more. Gosh, I'm so excited for Halo on PC. That is going to be a huge time sink. But overall, I think this is a great move. Xbox, I really don't think you can go wrong by adding these high-name developers. But again, like John said, every time this comes up, they have got to deliver. Let's head on over to our esports realm with Overwatch League Stage 2 playoffs. Sean, how did they go?
All right, let's go and break it all down. It all happened last weekend, and if you're lucky enough, maybe you caught a little bit of on ABC as well. So starting with Thursday, March 21st, just quick recap. Seoul Dynasty defeated the New York Excelsior 3-1. Vancouver Titans, no surprise, 3-0 against Boston Uprising. On Friday, the Fusion 3-1 the Atlanta Reign, and the Shock 3-0'd the Toronto Defiant. Moving on to Saturday for the semifinals. The Seoul Dynasty lost to Vancouver Titans 4-0. The semifinals were all sweeps. San Francisco Shock 4-0 against Philadelphia Fusion as well, which gives us a repeat matchup of our Stage 1 playoff finals between the San Francisco Shock and the Vancouver Titans. In Stage 1, wait one second. I totally read the wrong stage. My apologies. That was the Stage 1 recap. Let's take a look at Stage 2. I clicked the wrong tab because I'm a moron, and it's completely fine. Thursday, May 29th, Shanghai lost to San Francisco Shock. Yeah, big yikes. And the Spark beat the London Spitfire 3-1. Friday, May 10th, New York Excelsior and the Vancouver Titans both 3-0 their competitors, the LA Gladiators and Dallas Fuel, respectively. On May 11th, Saturday, the real semifinals, first Stage 2 of Season 2. 4-0 in favor of the Shock over the Spark, and the Titans win 4-1 over the New York Excelsior. So, again, moral of the story, it's a repeat matchup of Stage 1 is what I was trying to get at. Vancouver Titans, San Francisco Shock. In Stage 1, the Titans did take it 3-4 over the San Francisco Shock in the best of 7. In Stage 2, it did not go the distance. It only had to go 6 games. Joey, could the Shock get revenge on the Vancouver Titans defending their title from Stage 1? Yes. Yes, they can. Yes, they did. The San Francisco Shock, with our boy Rascal on it, took down the Vancouver Titans, the no longer undefeated Vancouver Titans, 4-2 to take home the Stage 2 Season 2 Stage Championship.
And honestly, John, the worst part about this is none of these results are that shocking, to be completely honest. I mean, to me, the biggest one is London Spitfire losing to the Hangzhou Spark 3-1. I'm not super surprised by the semifinals, not really surprised by the finals either. I guess it could have went 4-3 because Vancouver is a pretty good team, but they have looked shaky toward the end of Stage 2 here. So overall, I think San Francisco deserved the win. I think the bigger question for me is the fact that these matches are still blowouts. We have so many 3-0s, 4-0s, 4-1s, 3-1s. It's not that exciting at the moment. There is such a huge gap between the top of the table and the middle top of that area for the Overwatch League. I feel like they really need to break it down. The teams need to improve at that mid-level or something, because the playoffs are just not that exciting to watch when it feels like every matchup is going to be a 3-0 or 3-1. I want the Silver Scrapes in Overwatch League. I need that 5-game series or that 3-4-game series that really goes down to the wire, and there's so much on the line. Players with their backs against the wall. Right now, it just feels like a steamroller.
So Joey, again, for the second stage in a row, this was broadcast live on network television on ABC. Before the show, you briefly touched on it. You said you wanted to cover it on the show, so I'm interested to get your opinion. Were you a fan of Overwatch League on network television, mainly ABC?
No, I was not. And I'm going to break it down a little bit for you guys. I love the idea that esports is going more mainstream. I love the idea that they're continuing to push these bigger broadcasts. My biggest issue is they did not do a good job at all for casual fans. So I was sitting and watching with some friends who do not even play Overwatch. They had no idea what was going on. And all of the casters, all of the desk analysts just take it at a high level. If you're going to put it on an ABC, Fox, NBC, any of these bigger channels, you have to go out there and explain some things a little bit more for casual viewers. How does an escort map work? No one has any idea except what the word escort's defined as. So obviously that works a little bit. Capture, you could do the same thing. But overall, they really don't know the objective. They don't understand what ultimates mean. So to me, you're putting on a major broadcast channel, but you're really still opening it up only to the people who watch on Twitch anyway. If you're going to do this, you need to explain. Between rounds, there's so much time. Maybe you cut, instead of doing like one long interview, you cut it down a bit. Hey, this is what this map's going to be like. Just explain it a bit more. Maybe you do a camera walkthrough of the map and explain it as you go. It doesn't take that long, but you need to do something else for casual viewers. For me, Overwatch League is such an in-depth game, and it's so hard to follow even as an Overwatch player. There's just so much happening at once, and the camera angles they choose are very chaotic. To me, something like a Rocket League, and John and I have hit this so many times on the head, it's so much easier to put on network television and allow people to understand what's going on. Rocket League is simply putting a ball in a goal. That's something my grandmother can understand. It's easy enough to watch. It still looks chaotic because there's cars flying around here and there, but the basic objective is out there. Overwatch, there are so many different types. You have escort, you have double cap, you have capture the point. Like, there's too much going on for casual viewers, and unless you explain that, I don't see it doing that well. You're just going to get a lot of hate feedback.
So you're telling me that Grandma Courtside is not watching Overwatch League?
I don't know if she tuned into it or not.
I actually have to agree with you, Joey. I feel like, so essentially what they did was that they just took the main broadcast off of Twitch and put it on ABC. You know, how many times have we seen, I know League of Legends will do it, right? We'll do it. Will they have multiple streams, especially during Worlds? They'll have a stream for beginners where they kind of break the game down as they go. They go in depth and they go and explain the game. League of Legends is incredibly difficult to understand if you're a casual fan and you've never played League of Legends. Same thing with Overwatch. If you've never watched it, you need to have a stream that you put on network television that kind of breaks it down. Is it annoying for the fan that actually understands what's going on where you have to hear an announcer kind of explain what an escort map is? Yes, but at the end of the day, they're not there for that fan. They're there for the new fans. They're there for the fans trying to discover the game, trying to understand what's going on. I can't tell you how many times I've watched esports with friends that have no idea what esports are, that have no idea that professional gaming is even a legitimate thing. And they sit down, they watch, and they go, well, this is cool. This looks cool. It looks like a video game. It looks like it's a video game that I'm not playing. Someone else is playing. But I don't really understand what's going on. That's the issue. If you're going to put this on network television, keep your main stream on Twitch. Keep it on YouTube Gaming. Keep it on whatever platform you're streaming on. People that go to Twitch, people that go to YouTube are your hardcore gamers. They're the people that have a better understanding of the game. They play the game. They follow the league. They have a more in-depth understanding. When you go to ABC, you have to water it down. Have a secondary stream that you put up on ABC that has people breaking down the game, explaining, like what Joey said, the ultimates, the different kinds of maps. Maybe, you know, a little bit about the game, the history of the game, and why they picked certain maps. People like making personal connections. That's how people really start to go in depth into sporting events or teams or organizations or whatever. You can do the same thing for esports. You have to make that emotional connection. If you can't do that, you're not going to win people over. That's how you win people. That's how you win fans over. You have to be able to make that connection. You have to water it down so the people who are interested are not so overwhelmed they change the channel. So Joey, believe it or not, I agree with you on this.
Right, and I'm even thinking from the perspective of Overwatch gamers as well. If you're a casual Overwatch player, going to the professional scene and watching something like that is still at a whole nother level. So I feel like watering it down, yes, it won't benefit the players as much, but at the same point, I think it will have benefits for casual players as well. Someone who just plays Overwatch League here and there but doesn't understand the strategy behind it, they're more of a quick play type of player, I feel like there would be a lot more there for them too. And for me, it doesn't take that long to explain. Explaining an escort map can take 1 to 2 sentences. So for me, It's such a necessary need if you're going to put it on ABC. Otherwise, you're going to bring so much unnecessary hate to the Overwatch League and to esports in general. People just not understanding what's going on. They're going to be like, why are people getting paid to play this game? Why is this on national television? We get it every single time it goes up, unless they go into details. I feel like every time Rocket League has been streamed, they've done a good job explaining what's going on. Even League of Legends has done a good job breaking down strategy in the draft in particular. They said, this is why this pick would go well here. Yes, some people still won't understand that because they don't know the champions, but they're at least diving into the depth of why. Overwatch League feels more like there's a lot of chaos going on, this player's doing well, and this is why. It's not really breaking down the character composition, it's not really breaking why are they holding this point of the map over a different point. Stuff like that would just be so good for not only those casual viewers, but also casual players as well, in my opinion.
All right.
So eventually esports will break this gap. They're going to bridge it at some point, John. I have a feeling it might just end up being you and I that have to do it, though.
I'm completely fine with bridging that gap. Blizzard, hire me. I'm ready to go. I will move out to California tomorrow. I'm not even joking on that. So just real quick before we end the Overwatch segment, just a friendly reminder, Overwatch League All-Stars is coming up this week, May 15th and May 16th. That is 6 p.m. West Coast time. So that's what, 9 p.m. East Coast, the coast that matters, until I move out to California. Then it's the West Coast. But no, so 9 p.m. Eastern time for the All-Star event. Last year was a lot of fun. I thought the Widowmaker 1v1 was a little mundane and boring, but other than that, it was a good time. It was a lot of fun. So definitely check that out if you're a fan as well. And also, the legendary All-Star skins are available still in game. 200 Overwatch League tokens will get you either the Atlantic Mercy or Pacific Lucio skins. Both skins look absolutely fantastic. So that is available as well for all the Overwatch gamers out there too.
Sweet. And with that, let's head on over to League of Legends MSI to wrap up this episode. Currently looking at the standings, I believe we have one day left to play. We have Invictus Gaming, your world champion, sitting on top at 8-0 from the Chinese League. We have SK Telecom from the LCK sitting at 5-3 in second, tied with G2 of the LEC at 5-3. We have Team Liquid coming in fourth at 3-5, Flash Wolves following them at 2-6, and the Fongvu Buffalo, your play-in team, at 1-7. The hometown favorites not looking too good, John, but they are up against some of the best across the world right now.
They really are. And speaking of not looking too good, Team Liquid 3-5. What's going on? Depressing. Depressing.
Yeah, I mean, Team Liquid has definitely not looked that great. They've been a bit disappointing. But at the same point, John, we have to look at who they're playing against. Invictus Game is playing like one of the best teams in the world. SK Telecom is 12 men deep of pure excellence, really. I mean, that team is so talented. You could play their B team, and they'd probably still finish top three here at MSI. G2 looking incredible as well. The big thing with G2 is they have great mechanical players, but they're also really shifting up the meta. They're trying new things that people aren't expecting, and that's really catching people off guard. Team Liquid playing their standard drafts. They thought they could come in and really do it standard-wise, but they're up against three of the best from these other regions, and it is just not happening. I am impressed they've taken on the Flash Wolves, though. The Flash Wolves really being one of those perennial international teams that always does well on the international stage. Team Liquid finishing above them so far, I think, is a great thing for Team Liquid to take home with them. The Fongvu Buffalo, one win on the table, 7 losses. Not the greatest appearance in front of home fans. At the same point, they did win the wild card. They did make their way here.
Hey, at least they have one win.
There you go.
It's more than some LCS teams got this past split.
Hey, yo.
Yikes.
So this episode will be released probably to the public after we wrap up this last day of play-ins, but we can go over some of these matchups just quickly, John, as our live viewers will be able to see them. SK Telecom T1 up against Team Liquid. John, I see this one falling in the way of SKT.
Are you saying Team Liquid cannot stand a chance against SKT? Or is this SKT now, or is it SK1? They had that name change.
I think it's SKT1.
Okay.
I think they cut out the telecom and just became T.
We cut something out. Anywho, SKT takes it. You still can't pick against them.
I'm trying to find it, but I don't know if I'll be able to. SK Telecom T1 is what they're labeled as still.
Okay.
Back to the matchups. We have G2 up against PVB. I think G2 takes this one.
PVB. I like it when you say the initials. I'm going to go G2.
IG Flash Wolves. IG?
Oh, Can IG do it in 16 minutes?
No, I will take under 20. I think it happens.
It was IG that 16-minute SKT, right?
I don't remember. Was it?
I'm pretty sure.
It might have been. Yeah.
I'm almost positive Invictus Gaming 16-minute like Nexus demolished SKT.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. I'm not gonna lie. Watched the VOD. I'm almost 99.9% positive that was the game.
Yeah. I feel like the early jungle got going really quickly in that one, if I remember correctly.
It was not safe for work. Let's put it that way. Do not watch that VOD at work. That was all sorts of sneaky cosplay spicy.
Oh, hello, Mr. Baron. These last three, I think, are going to be the most interesting. Team Liquid up against G2. I am going to go to G2 in this one, but I do think Team Liquid, this is one of their best chances of last win.
I'm going to take Team Liquid, fully knowing G2 is going to take the win.
Ooh, okay. Flash Wolves PvB.
Flash Wolves.
Okay, I'm going to take the Fongvu Buffalo here.
Yeah, you
will. I think Flash Wolves are going to win. That's what my mind's telling me. But my heart says the Buffalo need to finish on a win here in front of their home crowd. I think they go a little off meta here and they catch the Flash Wolves off guard. So I'm going to take PvB. Not feeling super confident about the pick, but I'm hoping really hard that it works. Mm-hmm. And last but not least, we have SK Telecom up against IG. I do not see a 16-minute victory for IG in this one.
You're right. I see a 17-minute victory for IG in this one over SKT. Invictus Gaming finishing the group stage undefeated.
Yeah, I think they finished the group stage undefeated as well. I think this does go past 20 minutes, though.
I don't.
I think this is going to be a later game. SKT is going to be ready for that early game of IG. They're going to find a way to really even up Rookie a bit more, allow him not to roam as much in-game, and I think that's going to allow SKT to extend their defeat a bit longer into the match.
Extend their defeat a little bit longer.
Hey, oh. But yes, MSI continues this week, ending those play-in stages and then for the group stages. Then from there, we will be moving on to the playoffs, so exciting matchups ahead. Plus, if you log into lolesports.com with your League of Legends account, you can also accrue a little bit of blue essence on the side as well.
Oh my. Well, Nation, that will do it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to interact with us and this show. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also find us streaming regularly on Twitch. This show Monday nights. We have other streamers throughout the week on Tuesday and Thursday, with more being added throughout the week as well. Find that at twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right. Make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
Level up.